Here It Comes, the latest people, trends, and news on sustainable living in and around our corner of the country. Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And now, Mrs. Green.
Welcome, everybody. You are indeed listening to Down to Earth with Mrs. Green, Spotlight on the Southwest. And I'd like to mention that this show is made possible due to the generous support of the City of Tucson. We appreciate that support, as well as appreciating all of the great stuff that they do for our community. And we are going to hear a lot about that during the show. The name of our show is Trash Talk, and talk trash we will. We have an expert on talking trash with us. I'm thrilled to have as my in-studio guest, Andrew Quigley. He's the director, City of Tucson Environmental Services Department. As I said, our in-studio guest. And Andy, thanks for being here and for all the great things that you and your staff do, keeping many plates in the air and a lot of garbage out of our homes and the side streets. So we probably have more talking points to cover than we have time. But I think it's always good to start with a little bit overview of who our guest is. So why don't you tell us a little bit about you?
Well, thank you. It's a pleasure to be here and to take this opportunity to talk to your listeners about our programs here in Tucson. I'm not new to the business. I've been in local government now 40 years, primarily in solid waste, but did a little work in sewers. I worked for Arlington County, Virginia, Fairfax County, Virginia, a solid waste authority in Lake County, Illinois, outside Chicago, and came to Tucson 8 years ago to continue the fine work that they've been doing. So I've been looking at trash for a long time, and at no point did my mother ever think that I was going to get into trash.
That you're going to be doing a show called Talking Trash. I thought that was a really clever name that one of our staff came up with. You've gotten a lot of programs started. One you started in 2003 that I love. I call it the Do More Blue Project. I don't think that's what it's called, but it is basically to do more blue. And it started in 2003 with a Blue Barrel Recycling Program. Want to tell us a little bit about that? It was exciting.
That's right. We provide waste and recycling services for approximately 137,000 customers. And the city rolled out its recycling program literally with carts. And we provide 95-gallon carts to our customers. It's included in the rates that they pay. And we collect that once a week, and over 90% of our customers participate in that program at least once during the month. And again, our recycling is something that if your can isn't full, there's no reason for you to roll it out. But we've really gotten great support from our community with it.
So when you say there's 137,000 customers, is that the available amount of people that could access the service? I know it doesn't include apartments. I wanted to talk to you about that a little bit later on. But are those city customers that signed up for the service, or how did it work right back when it started?
Well, the city provides service to, for up to 24 units, and that's our customer base.
Okay.
And we also have about 3,500 commercial customers, and of that group, we probably provide recycling to a little over 800 of them.
Okay, so there's commercial customers too. And when this is kind of a little bit off the map a little bit, but a lot of people that live in apartments ask me about what they can do about recycling. So I tell them to call the city or talk to the apartment owner. That's the best thing. Talk to the apartment owner, be a little agitator to get recycling, because apartments they're not required to provide recycling, correct?
That's correct. And you're absolutely right. I think the first place to go is to get information from us and then talk to your management company. I think management companies react to things that their tenants want to do. And we are happy, even if they're not our customers, to sit down with them and their hauler and talk about how to bring recycling to that. Obviously, many multifamily dwellings have some turnover, and it's important to educate the new folks coming
right.
in as to what to do and how to participate in the program. We're willing to help in providing information to that management company. They can give it out to their tenants as they come in and work with the hauler who is servicing that account. We think almost in every case, if there's adequate space, and that's always a critical issue for multifamily dwellings, is adequate parking spaces. But we think that you can always provide recycling and overall reduce your solid waste collection costs.
I've actually had some people tell me that, like, their neighbor does. So they got into a relationship with their neighbor that says, I'm just going to bring it to yours if it's not too full, if their apartment doesn't supply it. And I just encourage people, after I say, find out what the city will do. And then where do schools lie in that whole milieu?
Well, Tucson Unified School District, for example, has Diggins who collects their waste. And then Diggins uses Friedman, which is a good recycling firm here in town,
okay.
long-time firm, provides recycling services for Tucson Unified Schools.
Okay, so they're doing it.
Yes.
But I agree with you, back to your point about if you are a tenant, I think most people that I know that contact me, they'd be willing to pay a little bit more, like a dollar more a month on their rent if it was a big apartment building, to be able to do it, because there is a consciousness about it that I think really matters.
Well, I think what matters to the management company is money.
Yes.
And so...
if they can get it out of the customer.
Exactly. And I think, again, you can reduce the frequency of collection, of trash collection, when you install recycling collection. And you can reduce the number of containers that are for trash and replace them with recycling containers. So there's a way to do this. But space is critical. And one of the things that we do on space is we provide input to the city's development services department. And we have standards for new construction
Great.
That go in. And the city's done a very good job about developing enclosures. And now our enclosure standards have changed so that we are requiring businesses to ensure that there's space for recycling, because it's a legitimate concern.
I agree. If a place only has 6 parking spots, you don't want to have one taken up with that. It's very legitimate. You
right.
want the customers to have easy access to your business.
Exactly. And you want it to look good. And that enclosure provides a nice barrier so that you don't have to see that all the time.
Right. Get it. That's very forward thinking. Now let's talk about one of my favorite subjects. I really do love to talk about trash too, but I actually can tell you with great assurity, I have taken people, 3 groups, on tours of the MRF. And for if people might not know what that is, it's the materials recovery facility where the recycling goes. And it's first class, if you ask me. It's better to go in the fall and the spring instead of the summer. I found that out. What kind of issues are you having with what's being collected, or are you?
Well, we have a great partner in ReCommunity, who is our recycling company. And one of the issues that we have, and it's not uncommon with all communities across the country, is contamination. And we're working with them, as well as we're going to be rolling out education to our customers to re-educate them about recycling. As you mentioned earlier, our logo is Do More Blue.
I love it.
And it's an award-winning logo, too, that was put together. So we won some, our company did that for us, won some awards. But one of the things that I think comes with that is the customer then is trying to be overzealous, perhaps. And I think one of the big contaminants for us is plastic bags. And
the ubiquitous plastic bags.
And today, outside, as you know, we got 40-mile-an-hour winds. I can't tell you how exciting it would be to be at the landfill today.
Lots of plastic bags
that are being launched.
They're just so awful.
So one of the things that we are trying to educate our customers about is those plastic bags need to be separated and taken to your grocery store.
Right.
And
every grocery store has a place for recycling the bags.
And film plastic is your dry cleaning bag. It's your sandwich bag without your sandwich, obviously, and the plastic bags that you pick
grocery
up.
Store.
And, you know, I use reusable bags every week. I accumulate plastic during the week, and I always bring that back to the grocery store. So there's two little keys to me. First, I always put my plastic bags where I can see them when I get in my car to go to the grocery store.
And so you can get them out of there.
So I can get them out of there. And the second thing is I keep my reusable bags in my car.
It's such a good step. I did a talk yesterday. I was telling you for Greater Tucson Leadership. And I said, you know, the whole process to sustainability can be overwhelming. If you start with two simple steps, cut down on your useless plastic bags. That's always my first one. Put your reusable bags in the car. Learn that habit. And, of course, I'm always picking at plastic bottles. There are two really large-scale, large-use plastics that we could get rid of if just changing our habits.
Absolutely.
So what other kinds of contaminants? Like, I think everybody doesn't know. Can they put their grass clippings in there? What about diapers? I mean, I hope I know the answer about diapers.
Well, you're absolutely right. Diapers and grass clippings
need
to go in your green barrel. We do not have right now a landscape waste composting opportunity. And quite frankly, I don't see one coming anytime soon within the city. Other states, like when I was in Illinois, landscape waste was banned from landfills. But we also generated a great deal of landscape waste because we all had grass lawns. Here we have the Zeroscape. Even if you contrast this with Phoenix, we have a lot less grass here than they do up the I-10. So,
and we have a private landfill owner that you partner with and have been very supportive of. So
yeah.
that takes landscaping and post-construction waste.
Exactly, we do. And, for example, our program we started last year, all the golf courses now in the city, all their landscape waste is being recycled.
That's wonderful.
And it's saving them money. And we've got recycling now at all the courses. I heard many complaints from people who came to visit us in the winter saying, where's my recycling? And we put in new ball washers and tee boxes for the players to be able to recycle. And by and large, they're doing a great job.
That's awesome. So you can't put landscaping or diapers. What about, are there food contaminants? They get pushed off the line.
Yeah,
any kind of food, pretty much.
Well, you know, I think let's talk about the pizza box.
And, perfect. That was what I was going to say. What about if you get grease on your pizza box?
If you got grease on your pizza box and it's a lot of grease, just put it in the trash. If it's lightly greased or the top of it really isn't, put that back in the recycling.
Right. Use your head.
Right. I think the other thing, and I think people have to realize, there are different materials taken in different programs. For example, in the foothills in Pima County, waste management does not take all the plastics that we do in the city. Our contractor is set up to take the full range of plastics. So the yogurt container.
Right. That was a great day when that got added.
Exactly. The fruit container that you buy at the grocery store when you buy your strawberries, those containers now can go into your trash.
Is
or recycling.
Is it 1 through 7?
It is. But one of the things it's not is styrofoam. And that's another thing that I think people commonly, and that comes with the drink cups that are made of styrofoam.
Yes, and the to-go
right. And
food.
We won't say where that comes from. So what my point there is styrofoam is recyclable, but unfortunately, styrofoam, let's say the stuff that comes with your Panasonic television or your computer, some of it's treated with a fire retardant, some of it isn't. We don't really know. And so when it gets to the recycling facility, you have to
get it out of there.
You have to get it out of there because you don't know whether it's treated or not. Because if you mix treated styrofoam with untreated styrofoam, it ruins the recycling process. So styrofoam is best recycled, what I call is pre-consumer, out of the at the place where the manufacturing is taking place, because they can guarantee the quality of that styrofoam. So we ask our customers just not to put styrofoam containers into the recycling container.
And we try to, we as a family, try to put to-go containers in the car so that when we go to restaurants, we can use our own, ecologically friendly to-go containers, and we forget. I'm Mrs. Green. I'm trying to spell
that's
the word.
Impressive.
I see styrofoam, and then they put it in a plastic bag, and I'm like, I'm going to lose my dinner, because you have to be
that's very
passionate
impressive.
About some of it. So don't put diapers in. Don't put clothing in.
That's
you can
correct.
Take all your clothing to Goodwill.
Exactly.
Take everything.
You can take it to Goodwill. Again, those kinds of materials just can't be handled. I want your listeners to understand that this recycling facility, and again, we contact us. We can provide your listeners with tours of it. But I always like to welcome people to Away, whether it's there or at the landfill. And they look at me and they go, "What do you mean Away?" And I said, "Well, this is your trash and recycling just goes away, right?"
And here's
so
Away.
here's Away. And the recycling facility operates really on the principle of gravity. So materials continually get dropped through the system into conveyors and into for recycling. And plastic bags and styrofoam peanuts really don't lend themselves to any kind of processing at all that way because of their, again, inherent lightness. So, again, those materials, let's leave them, put them in the trash. Bag your trash. That's another thing that we want our customers to do, and our commercial customers, is bag it. I wish I could say bag your recyclables, but the plant isn't set up with a cutter
to take the bags up.
Oh,
my gosh.
If you take, for example, people shred their paper and their documents at home, we can take shredded paper, and if they put it in a clear, again, mixed message here,
so you can
plastic
spray.
Bag, okay,
you
clear
can't
plastic
get away from
bag.
Totally.
That the operator can, the staff there can see it. They can hand rip it open. Literally, that's what will happen to it, and we'll process that paper.
And what I think there's a good economic cause that we can mention. There's an inspiration to be sure you don't put plastic in, because thin film plastic, I've been out there enough to see it, it shuts down the conveyor belts. So that's time and money,
right.
And it probably ends up being more costly, which ultimately probably ends up in the consumer. But the thin film plastic, it gunks up, as I say, that very scientific word, it gunks up the machines, and it's not good. And another little funny thing, I went out, I'm Mrs. Green, I went out to tour Sam Levitt's facility. They were really proud of the work they're doing with recycling, and they have a styrofoam eating machine that they, because can you imagine how much stuff they get in terms
of
styrofoam? Yeah. So they actually have a machine that melts it, and it comes out looking like worms. I thought that was, another exciting day in the world of Mrs. Green. Okay, what about how do people educate themselves the easiest way? I mean, if you had a website, would you say go to Do More Blue and start your education there?
Go to Do More Blue. Also, we have a partnership with Tucson Clean and Beautiful. They're also
love them. They're awesome.
Right. They are. We provide funding to them, and we've had a long, very a great working relationship with that organization. So we're both primed to be able to get people in the right direction with respect to that. One program I do want to talk about that we've just introduced this year, in fact, we're going to Mayor and Council on June 9th to kind of set it in permanently, is our food waste composting program.
Talk about that. I'm so glad I put something up on Facebook. I'm glad you mentioned that.
Well, the food waste composting program is something that we've done in partnership with the University of Arizona and their group called Composting Cats. And so this relationship, we've kind of taken over the collection of it last July. They were actually having students work with containers and a pickup truck, and it really wasn't a full kind of professional
not
way
set
of
up
doing
for that.
Right. So we took that over, fully automated it. We're using our side loader vehicles for the 95-gallon containers. We're also moving our customers also to front-load containers. We've got Food City, who is, we've got three sites right now. We're about ready to open up two more. And the grocery stores are really great sources for food waste. And we are hauling that. We don't get a full load. So it's the first thing in the morning that our operator does is he goes and takes care of the food waste and then goes off to his regular route. Then we haul it down to Compost Cats, which is located on at St. Xavier de Bach, part of the nation's ag farm, and in partnership with them, they do the composting.
That's awesome. I mean, really, that's there. You heard my New Jersey come out. I said it was awesome, but it's awesome too. I was like, we put that up, and it was funny. I got a lot of feedback on my Facebook page when Christina sent me the announcement, and people were asking me about, is there anything available for picking up composting in homes? Do you think we'll ever be there?
Well, let's talk about the economics of trash, and we have to talk about that.
Because we're talking trash.
75% of the cost of solid waste management is the collection, and 25% is the disposal.
Wow.
So you've got to be able to collect enough to pay for a route, and you've got to, on the other end of that, find a revenue source. Now, right now, Compost Cats is providing their compost primarily back to the farm. They've been certified organic, and so they're using that as part of a complete closing that loop with respect to food, kind of the farm to market concept. But there's really not a lot of markets out there. When we first moved here to Tucson, and I was getting ready to put in the plants that we wanted to put in the front yard, and I went to the nursery and I was looking around and I bought some plants. I go, well, where's the compost for the? And the guy looked at me and said, what?
What are you
talking about? And of course, then I spent the next 3 hours trying to dig in our ground.
not like Fairfax.
Exactly, or Chicago.
Or Chicago.
So it was a real challenge. And quite frankly, our native plants don't really use the kind of humus material that compost generates. And so I'm always a big fan of native plants and using those as often as you can here and not bringing in the invasive species. So the demand for compost is really kind of limited, I think, in this more to this closed loop situation. I know Jason Tankersley and his group works on some projects too, but there's just not a lot of big demand for it. We don't generate a lot. And so even though at our homes, I encourage people to think about home composting and doing it on their own, rather than relying on us to set up a route to go and collect it.
And you're right. I mean, our area here, it's all xeriscape, all indigenous species plants. But what we did, I'm sure you know about this, there's now a pickup service that they drop a bin off to you, and that we've been very happy with them. Because we use just smoothies. And if you're Mrs. Green and Mr. Green, you feel guilty if you're throwing anything in the garbage. And so now it's like guilt reduction, and it's very convenient. So there's innovative alternatives like that coming up. And I don't know who they give it to, but I vetted them, and they don't just throw it in the wash somewhere.
Right. No, I'm sure they don't. I think, until we can find really sustainable markets for this, I think a lot of composting also might be used in water harvesting.
Yes,
those kinds of things. And again, we have to get those projects underway to do that. So there is interest in it. It's just right now we're working with our commercial customers, the restaurants, and the grocery stores who generate relatively large quantities of material.
And again,
educating also our customers as to how to prepare that, because Compost Cats, they're great folks, but they really have what I call indentured servants working on it with college students.
And they graduate.
And they can't, they got to hand work this material. And so when it's When you throw that plastic container in there, it really creates an issue for them. So we work really hard. Also, Raytheon just came on as a post-consumer business client of ours, and we're doing it at their cafeteria. So we're got our fingers crossed. Again, back in the day, you remember, yes, you had your lunch tray in school and you dumped it into the disposal, right? I mean, that was the first thing. But now we have all these various containers and things like this that makes things a lot more difficult to do.
It becomes getting rid of, you go to a place like California or Portland, and I stand there and I'm reading, this is for this, this is for this, this is for this, this is for this, and I don't want to do the wrong thing.
And they're paying $40 a month for trash service.
For
so
trash
that's a,
right. And, big and they difference. Get,
right.
So there's other areas that you have responsibility for in what I would say the macro picture, the landfills themselves.
That's
don't
correct.
Do the trash and recycling. You have to responsibly manage where that stuff goes.
Well, the Los Reales landfill has been in the city since 1967, and it's our current landfill location. But since 1967, the city, in its wisdom back in the day, opened and closed several landfills throughout the city, and we are responsible for the maintenance of those, putting covers on them. People probably see the one at Speedway and Kolb. The Vincent Mullins landfill.
You can see, like, the methane kind of.
Right. Well, right. And so we have 16 of these landfills that we're responsible for. And our customers help us maintain them through a groundwater protection fee that we instituted a couple of years ago because we had no method other than the landfill. And when other people open up solid waste disposal facilities, the landfill can't effectively compete with that. And so we had to try to find a way to do that in the groundwater protection fee, because that's exactly what we're doing, is we're protecting groundwater. I think the other thing that the public doesn't realize is that we treat and clean over 1 million gallons a day of contaminated groundwater that we collect from these facilities.
I guarantee you, if I didn't know that, they don't. So say it again, how much?
1 million gallons a day.
Okay.
And now Tucson Water sells 85 million gallons a day of good, clean water, but we treat 1 million gallons a day of contaminated groundwater from these old landfills. So that's another service that we provide.
It's another big job.
It is.
It really is. The some people talk about what we used to put in landfills that we don't anymore. There's copper and there's blah, 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 blah. Do you have any trouble with people trying to mine the landfills? Do you have to monitor that, or is it not really an issue?
We have more trouble with people going to the landfill and dumping out of the back of their truck and somebody wanting to take something. You know, one man's trash is another man's treasure. That's a bigger problem. You know, there are some communities where landfills are very, very expensive. And you've seen a lot of places where they mine the landfills, and they go in and reclaim the land, and they bring those materials out. At our Congress landfill, we did some work out there several years ago. We found newspaper that you could easily read that was over 50 years old. And, you know, all of that.
Was that when Wilson was still around?
Oh, yeah. I'm sure Wilson was here then. So you were – not Wilson wasn't working for us when it was 50 years ago, but we certainly you know, we have a very dry climate, and our landfills don't decompose. And that's something that we just have to live with here in the Southwest.
Yeah, it's not raining all the time and making mush out of it. We have about 1 minute, and I can't even ask you this question and give you an adequate time to answer it. But social media is helping get the word out. Is it help educating your customers?
It is.
That's good. I want to know that. Okay, everybody. This is some websites, tucsonaz.gov/es/residential recycling. Check out their page on Facebook, Do More Blue. It's a great page. It has current information. It has fun tips. Whoever's doing that, kudos to them, because I do a lot of shares from their pages on the Mrs. Green's World page. Everybody, make it a great green week. next Mrs. Green's World Show, Kathleen Rogers, president of Earth Day Network. And our next Down to Earth is Sophia Fourier Montes, manager of Felicia's Farm. We'll find out who that is and what that's all about. Andy, thanks a lot.
And great
I loved
to be here.
Having
Thank
a
you.
Show called Trash Talk. Make it a great green week, everybody.